Well, good evening. This is an interview for the Michigan Writers Series, Friday, February 6, 2004. I'm speaking tonight with Amy Hassinger, a native of Massachusetts and a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop. Her debut novel, Nina Adolescence, was published last year by Putnam & Sons. Welcome to MSU, Amy.
Thank you.
I read in an interview that your inspiration for the book, in part, was real art. The photographs of Robert Mitchell and Sally Mann, and paintings by Lucian Freud and Balthus. What about the characters you created? Did you draw on people you know or even your own adolescent experiences?
Well, I definitely drew on my own adolescence kind of as a whole. I mean, the emotions surrounding it. The book is thankfully not autobiographical because
well,
there
good.
Are a lot of sad things and difficult things that happen in the book. But the general experience of adolescence, of as an adolescent girl specifically, I think feeling like you're sort of on display as you become, as you develop physically, was a big thing that I drew on. And there's dance in the book, and that was specifically from my own experience. I grew up taking dance lessons. I didn't do a whole lot of performing, but. And then as far as characters go, I mean, I think probably most writers would say that their characters are generally composites of maybe one or several people that they know, kind of, you know, drawn into one. I wouldn't point a finger at any character and say, yeah, this person is so-and-so, you know, but it, you know, you take pieces here and there, and then you invent what you need to invent. And, you know, there's a balance there somewhere. I mean, I would say that with this book, I think I did more inventing than, you know, drawing from life.
Did you know someone who experienced a tragedy like Nina's family did with the death of her little brother?
You know, it's funny because I hadn't thought about this at all. But after the book came out, an old friend of mine read it and contacted me and said, and sort of said, well, you must have been drawing on my life. And then I realized, oh my gosh, you know, of course, she had a younger brother who died early. And he didn't drown, he died of leukemia when he was young. But I remember when I was a girl, that had an impact on me because I was close with her family. So I think I must have, you know, subconsciously drawn on some of that. But I didn't set out to do that. And in fact, the pretext of the death of Nina's younger brother, Jonas, came in toward the end of my first draft writing process. So I actually didn't really begin with that idea at all. And it kind of came out of the tension between Nina and her mother. And I realized that there had to be something very significant that kind of caused that extreme
some catalyst
tension between them.
Okay. Well, the title character of your book, Nina, is a 15-year-old girl who sometimes seems too wise for her age. I thought, for example, that the passage in which she compares lovemaking to drowning was beautifully written, and it really brought tears to my eyes, but still it was awfully deep for a teenager. What do you have to say to those who might question the authenticity of Nina's voice?
Well, I'd say you have to judge for yourself. Okay. I think teenagers can be strikingly wise, especially those who have experienced tragedy or experienced really difficult things in their life. That, you know, they, like adults, you know, I mean, they glean bits of wisdom from those experiences. So I do, I mean, I guess, you know, that might be my counter. I mean, I think the interesting thing about teenagers is that they can really vacillate extremely between being very wise at times and then being completely insipid and silly, you know? And often that happens, you know, like within the same breath or something, you know, so it's a real kind of extreme.
And you certainly drew Nina that way, you know, the way she relates to her parents and so forth, but yet she's very sympathetic towards her father, I think especially after she learned of her mother's affair and so forth. So I think you drew a very balanced portrait of her. But there are sometimes, though, I just wondered, like, oh, gosh, you know, it's really deep, and I can see how someone might question that. But but thanks. You know, we all have to judge for ourselves.
Right.
And well, switching gears a little now, later this year you'll have a story published in Best Lesbian Love Stories 2004.
Actually, it's already out.
Oh, it's already out?
I have a copy with me, and I read a little from it. So.
Oh, is it just a coincidence that the main character in your story, Llorona?
It's La Llorona.
La Llorona. Yeah. I don't know Spanish.
That's okay.
And the main character is named Nina. So
right, and I'm going to talk about that at the reading too.
It's good.
That was actually how I began this book. It came out of that story originally.
Okay.
I wrote the story first, and in that story, La Llorona, that Nina is known in her neighborhood as La Llorona, which means the wailing woman, I believe it's a Mexican folktale about a woman, La Llorona. in any case, so that story takes place in San Francisco, and that Nina wails almost subconsciously. I mean, it's not really something she's fully conscious of. And so when I wrote the story and finished it, I felt like I wanted to learn a little more about her, because in the story, her wail isn't ever really completely explained. I mean, it's...
Right.
And I didn't really want to do that in the story, but I was interested in exploring her character a bit more. So I began writing earlier in her life.
Yeah.
And that's how Nina adolescence emerged. At this point, I would say... I mean, I really don't think of them as the same person.
Okay.
You know, they live in two very different worlds, but that was the genesis of that novel.
Anyway. But I could see the trajectory because of references in the story to, you know, the father being alive back in Massachusetts, and that's where the adult Nina was from, and so forth.
Right.
Just drawing comparisons there, and also her unexplained grief, you know, or something that led to the wail and led her to shutting herself off from others. I thought I could easily see, you know, Nina Begley, you know, being this adult Nina, having read the story after I finished the book. you know, what was your inspiration for that short story?
Oh, boy. That was a long time ago I wrote that, so I really don't remember. I think often I like to write things kind of around a place, and I lived in San Francisco for 2 years, and I wanted to sort of capture something of San Francisco in that story, I think. But I wouldn't go so far as to say that was necessarily my inspiration.
Okay. I wonder too if you knew the folk story before.
Yeah, I had read.
Wrote yours
actually in college. I think I had read the folk tale and. So that was in the back of my mind somewhere, and it's all very mysterious how that happens, you know, it all kind of bubbles up. And
good. Mm-hmm. No, I have a question for you, because you've published a textbook, Finding Kadadan. I knew I had it pronounced correctly earlier when I was practicing.
That's right.
Would you please say it?
It's Kadadan.
Kadadan.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it's on Maine's history. So what led you to write something like that?
Well, that was actually kind of the beginning of my writing career, really. I mean, I'll tell you my whole life story here.
Well, it's okay. We have a few minutes.
After I lived in San Francisco, I moved out to Maine. Actually with my husband, who was not my husband at the time, but and I was looking around for a job and walked into the office of the University of Maine Press, thinking that maybe they might need a proofreader or something. And the director there, Michael Alpert, talked to me about this project, which they had in the works, which was they had a college text of Maine history that they wanted to kind of translate for middle school students, because Maine studies is a required subject there.
Oh, okay.
Or it used to be. I think they might have changed that law, actually, recently. But anyway, so they hired me. They eventually hired me to do that. And as it turned out, as I began working on it, it kind of really became its own book. And because it's sort of a very difficult task to kind of take a college text and make it a middle school text, because, you know, middle school students are totally somewhere else mentally. So anyway, but that's how I started working on that. It was a work for hire project. And then actually once I was working on that, I was in a position, because I was working, writing at home, and mm-hmm. to use my time also to work on my short stories. So I started working more seriously on my fiction writing during that time too, which was a blessing.
And do you ever plan to, or hope to publish a collection of short stories?
Possibly. I've given it some thought. I think I'm probably more naturally a novelist than I am a short story writer. It seems like once I start telling a story, I need to kind of grow it and grow it and expand it, and, you know, it becomes big very mm-hmm. quickly. But I do have, you know, several stories that mm-hmm. I've given some thought to putting into a collection.
Oh, good. Maybe. And speaking about writing and expanding on a story and writing a whole book out of it, I read, too, that with Nina Adolescence, you had originally started with an omniscient narrator mm-hmm. and telling the story from both Marion's and Nina's points of view. And then when your advisor or someone suggested you focus just on one, mm-hmm. you threw mm-hmm. out 400 pages mm-hmm. of text. Is there another novel there, perhaps?
I don't think so. I haven't been longing to get back to it at all. I mean, to be honest, I don't even know where it is. I probably could find it. It must be on my laptop somewhere. But
you should never throw anything away in case you want to donate your papers or sell your papers someday.
I don't imagine that'll be of great interest.
You never know.
I think you have to really be, you know, obsessed with an idea or mm-hmm. an image or a character or something to want to write a whole book about it. And I feel like at this point I'm sort of finished with the characters in Nina Adolescence. So who knows?
Okay.
You never want to, never say never.
Well, that's okay. Well, please tell me about the novel you're currently working on.
This novel is a book called, right now, it's called The Priest's Madonna. And it's set in France, mm-hmm. in the south of France, in the Languedoc region. My French pronunciation is not great, so bear with me. But it's set in a very small village. It's actually based on a true story mm-hmm. about a priest who came to this village. The name of the village is Rennes-le-Château, in 1885. And during the course of his time there, he began restoring the church because it was in terrible shape. And he somehow grew wealthy and built mm-hmm. a villa on the property, built a beautiful garden and grounds and a tower with a library and a walkway and stuff. So it's this big mystery about how he earned his money, and there are many theories. And in fact, there's a whole kind of mini industry in France, in this region of France, devoted to this story.
Still.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Some people are, you know, just obsessed with it. And, you know, that's how they spend their time, and I can understand why, because it's really kind of fascinating. Mm-hmm. There are lots of kooky theories out there too, you know, ranging from like something, of course, to do with aliens. It has to be something to do with aliens. Down to the sort of most practical explanation, which is that this priest ran a mail order fundraising business, basically, in which he advertised in various Catholic weeklies to accept. To say masses, mm-hmm. which was the practice and still is, I believe, actually, that priests will say masses for a particular person, and they will receive an honorarium for that, very small. Anyway, there's all kinds of theories about how he earned his money. But I was interested in exploring both kind of the mystery, but also the relationship between him and his housekeeper. Mm-hmm. His housekeeper... it was also a historical figure, and it was rumored that they were lovers. Mm-hmm. They lived together also with her family in the same in the presbytery. They were certainly very close companions, and I was interested to kind of explore what her her take on the whole thing was, and mm-hmm. and quite also questions of faith, really, you know, how, what happened to this man that in becoming a priest, you know, he had to have some kind of relationship to God and to faith and to the church, and then to find this wealth and use it to build his own little personal kingdom. You know, how did that transform right. him as far as his own beliefs and his own feelings about faith? And her so it's sort of a long explanation,
I'm still very
much in the middle of the book, so it's you know, it's not real easy for me to sum it up, but it's from her perspective.
Right. Right, I did read that somewhere.
Yeah.
How did you hear about this story to begin with, the story of the priest?
It's actually, should I tell you the short story or the long story?
Short story at this point.
A few more minutes. I read it in a book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Okay.
Which was published in the 80s and it was a bestseller in Britain. And actually, the Da Vinci Code is based on some of these ideas as well. And now that that book is doing so well,
so
a lot
popular.
Of people are buying this book, Holy Blood,
yes.
Holy Grail, and reading it for themselves. But
and then when people buy more copies of the Da Vinci Code once your book is out, you know, on Amazon.com, they'll say, you might also like this
right.
book by Amy Hassinger. Yeah.
We hope.
Building
we hope.
Sales. Okay, sorry.
Anyway, so in this book, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, there's a little snippet of the story about the priest, but that was
okay.
enough to make me go, oh, that's interesting.
Oh, good. Good. When do you hope to finish it and see it published?
My deadline is this September to have a final draft in. I think I'm, knock on wood, pretty well along the way to meeting that deadline.
Good.
And then probably, I mean, it wouldn't be till 2005, maybe the summer of 2005.
Okay. But not too far away, really.
Yeah.
Okay, and this one last question. This being the Michigan Writer Series, we always have to ask something about the guest's work in the, within the context of setting in Michigan or whatever. But in your case, do you think Michigan might possibly ever serve as a setting for your work?
Potentially. I think it kind of depends on how long we stay here.
Okay.
We've only lived here a year.
Oh, okay.
So... But if we stay here longer, mm-hmm. which we certainly will, most likely another year, then potentially yes. I definitely, as I said before, I get interested in place and mm-hmm. the culture of a place, and I still have a lot of exploring to do
yes.
in Michigan. But potentially,
good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Amy, for participating in the MSU Libraries Michigan Writer Series. And good luck with your reading tonight.
Thanks very much.